Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today I'm jazzed to have Cheryl Cran. Cheryl is a future of work expert and founder of NextMapping.com. She's the author of 7 books, including her new book released this year called Next Mapping, Anticipate, Navigate, and Create the Future of Work, as well as the bestseller, The Age of Change Leadership, Driving Transformation in a Fast-Paced World. Cheryl's been named a number one Future of Work influencer and is an international award-winning consultant. Her Future of Work thought leadership has been featured in publications such as the Huffington Post, Forbes, ABC Magazine, Law Magazine, Metro New York, Entrepreneur Magazine, CBS, NBC, Fox, there's many. Her clients include AT&T, Kaiser, Gartner Group, Upwork, and many others. You're welcome to go to her website, nextmapping.com, and her Twitter handle is Cheryl Cran, that's C-H-E-R-Y-L, Cran is C-R-A-N, all one word. So welcome, Cheryl. I really appreciate you being with us from Vancouver today.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to be with you.
Are you Canadian?
I am Canadian, yes.
Okay.
Oot and a boot.
Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Great. So as I always do, I would like to hear from you, Cheryl, about sort of your journey and how you began your career as a future of work influencer. You know, we know you have lots of books. We know you are a consultant, but that's the easy stuff. I kind of want to hear the stories.
It's so funny, the number of people that want to know the background, like how do you end up being a future of work influencer? And I'm happy to share it. So, I'll give you the shortest version I possibly can.
Okay.
Yeah, my background is actually finance and insurance. So right out of high school, I went into banking. This was in the early 80s, 1981, I graduated. I did not go to college or university right away. Because if anybody's old enough listening to this recording, you'll know that in the 80s it was a major depression. There was the interest rates were 18-20%. It was quite a volatile time. And so I decided rather than go to university and college, I would get a job first and then get educated as I went along. And I did that. So I started in banking and I progressed really rapidly in banking. I got my first leadership position at 23. Not because I was a good leader, but because I was really good at handling robberies, but that's a whole other story. And then from there, got headhunted away from banking to insurance and was an area manager at the age of 29 and had a lot of freedom. I was doing remote work at a time that it wasn't even talked about. You know, this was in the late 80s, early 90s. And then from there, went and headed up a program for a credit union, something they'd never done before, and I was probably the first out of office worker they had, which means I worked from home primarily, and I was able to only go into the office, you know, one day a week. And we grew that portfolio to $10 million in a year, really did successful. And I decided, I guess I would have been about 35 at the time, that rather than make money for the big banks and for the big institutions, I'd like to start my own consulting firm. So I had a boss who really encouraged me to do that. My strengths were definitely that I was entrepreneurial, that I was a sales-driven person, that I was very much about helping people. And I interned with a consulting firm for a year, a Vancouver consulting firm called Kaizen Consulting. And he offered me partnership after a year, which was very cool. I enjoyed and found that I had an affinity for consulting. And I came home to my husband. He said, no, don't become a partner. Start your own firm. And so in 1997, I started Synthesis at Work, which is the parent company to Next Mapping. Mm-hmm. And my area of focus for the last few decades has been business growth, leadership, strategic communication, strategic growth, always focused on the future. How do we prepare for the future as it increases in technology and competitiveness? And then 2 years ago, we worked with a branding company who literally interviewed our clients, interviewed our success stories and our case studies, and came up with encapsulating all the work that we've been doing and calling it Next Mapping. So that's kind of the quick and, you know, fast journey of how we got to where we are. Yeah.
I see. Okay, that sounds great. So interesting parallel with our firm, because we started in 1996, so similar
there
timing.
You go.
Yeah. So So I like this idea of next magazine. So talk with us a little bit about that. I know you've written a lot of books and there's a lot of other things and it got you to this point, but I really do want to focus more on that. You could start with, talk about next mapping, what you mean by that and how you use it and what it means for your clients.
Yeah, so next mapping, our tagline is mapping the how to be future ready now. We really wanted to differentiate ourselves in that we're not, as an expert, as a thought leader, am not just a futurist. It's about talking about what the trends are around people and technology and then providing the map or the how to deal with that reality. So a lot of times I say the future is not some far off and far away distance. It's actually now. So the actions we take now, the plans we make now are preparing us for that future. So next mapping is all about where are you now and what needs to happen next from where you are in order to create your next success, but also for the future. None of us has a crystal ball. None of us can predict. But in my book, I do provide a predict model around how we can sort of take from a multiple perspective standpoint a number of inputs, a number of data inputs to help us say, okay, I get a sense of how we've succeeded so far. I know where we are now. Now, how do we leverage the trends and what's happening to blend what we do well along with the trends that are happening for the future?
Yeah, that's first of all, I love the tagline. So kudos to that. In terms of like, it's why you hire a consultant to help you with taglines. So that's awesome. And I like the idea a lot of that there is this, you know, we do a little bit of this in our work as well, where, you know, people think there's just like sort of the future is so far away. It's not. I mean, it's right here. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like that a lot. So before we get into the specifics about the next mapping process, I want to just talk about context a little bit about automation, AI, robots, all that, because it has been a theme throughout, and the reason why we started this series in the first place, and we've been doing Wise Talk for 15 years, but we started this theme of AI this year because there's just so much rhetoric around the concept of the robots are coming and they're going to take our jobs. And I just don't believe that. I mean, I think that, yes, they're going to take some jobs, but there's a lot of other things that people can do too. So there's going to have to be a reskilling and such. But I want to get your take on it. How the idea of AI particularly plays into the work you're doing.
Well, you know, we've been looking at the impact of technology. I think back in 2010 when I wrote my Generations book, that was a big part of the whole change that we've been going through. It's not around generations that are making the change. It's the technology innovation. And every year we see exponential shift in technology innovation.
Yes.
And you're absolutely right. This last year, the focus has really been on AI and automation because a lot more organizations are really now integrating it. It was a concept before. It was being talked about. Now it's being applied and integrated. I just completed an MIT course on AI and automation, which was a phenomenal extra to what we already know around things that are AI that we don't even realize. So, for example, Siri is a form of AI. Alexa is a form of AI. When we're doing
Google
internet searching, Google is AI, exactly.
So
I think it's really about demystifying what AI is and how it can help business. I know for us, we now leverage AI on our surveys. We have sentiment analysis. We're leveraging AI on a new platform that we're creating that will help people plot out what's next for the future. But for the businesses that we're working with, a lot of them are leveraging AI in order to do their jobs better and faster. So to your point, we wrote a white paper called, you know, the future of AI and automation and robotics, which is on our website, and it's free for anyone. About the research, it shows that by 2030, even though we have AI and automation, there's still going to be about 6 million jobs short in the U.S., in other words, workers for those jobs. We are in the lowest unemployment rate ever in decades. I think it's the 70s that had the same percentage of unemployment rate. So So when we look at AI and automation, it's really about how we are building a hybrid approach to work where we're leveraging AI to help us be more effective, more efficient, more productive. And so our research has shown that actually more jobs are going to be created, which is exactly what happened when email became, you know, as prevalent as it was in the 80s. The prediction was we were going to have less paper. That never happened. The prediction was that we were going to work less hours. That never happened, you know.
Oh, God, no. Yeah.
So we're just not at NextMap, and we do not ascribe to the fear-mongering around this whole rhetoric, as you say, AI. We see it as, we can help organizations leverage AI so that their workers can do more work that they enjoy and love. That's really how we look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's talk about the next mapping process. So you've got a six-parter there. Could you take us through the process and then give us some examples of how some of your clients use it? Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, so we've been doing this process for the, you know, since we originated as a consulting firm. When we branded as Next Mapping, we became very clear on the titles for it, if you will, and refining it with the technological innovation. But the six steps of the Next Mapping process are discover, ideate, model, iterate, map, and integrate. And what we believe is you cannot strategize, you cannot improve leadership, you cannot improve team synergy, you cannot improve anything within a business unless you're first willing to assess, which is the discover piece.
Right.
And I'm sure in your firm that this is, you know, standard practice is kind of where are we now? In our discover phase, we do a number of interesting things. We use our AI-enabled sentiment analysis surveys. We do surveying not just of employee and customer, but we also do peer assessments. We do competitor assessments, and we gather as much data as we possibly can to help us see what's really going on within the business and what are the opportunities. Then on the ideate phase, that's where our expertise comes in. We find a lot of times the reason we're hired is because organizations are highly successful. Let's face it, they don't need consultants. Nobody really needs a consultant. The value of a consultant is that we bring in perspective that they just wouldn't have access to. I'm sure you've experienced this in most organizations. They're so internally focused, and you can have very visionary people within an organization. But even with that, you're still looking at the business through the lens of the past and the present. Very rarely are you able to have that context to say this is where we're going for the future without having some sort of skewed perspective, if you will. Because all due respect. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And also people don't have the perspective of other companies. I mean, this is why it's good to hire people. You know, people talking about hiring within. Like, yeah, you should hire within to a certain extent. You need to bring in a fresh perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for most consultants, the good ones have worked in multiple industries for multiple clients, and they've built a great database of examples and context that they bring to the table. So, and then in the model phase, we kind of look at, okay, now that we've gathered the data, now that we've ideated and we've kind of looked at all these possibilities, how does it map on the future landscape? So we look at the trends. So now we're looking at trends, not just within the industry, because we find, again, that's what most people do is they look at their most closest competitors.
Mm-hmm.
We actually take it further than that. We look at synergistic industries, and we also look at out-of-the-box industries. So, for example, even if you might be a healthcare business, we might look at Uber or Lyft and what they're doing and see how that might affect your healthcare business. So, for example, that's right. And then in the iterate phase, we look at, we poll. So even though we've done the customer surveys, employee surveys, now we're using real-time polling to get real-time feedback and analysis on how people are feeling. So we're getting that emotional piece of what are they feeling about the way we do our employee, you know, experiences? What are they feeling? How are the customers feeling about these particular processes that we do as for them as our clients? Then that's when we get into the visual and the dashboard and the mapping. So after that, we look at all the information and we create a visual map. We do that in two ways. We do it through technology, proprietary technology that we have that lets them see really clearly where they are now, the data we've gathered, and what the implications are of that data, what it means. And out of that meaning, that's where we then get into integrate. So now, you know, we've got the map. Obviously, you can have the greatest plans, but if you don't have an implementation plan, that's where the how comes in. And that's where we look at, so what has to happen in order to create the I would call it the impetus of where we're going. In other words, where we know we need to go. Now, what's the how? Who are the right people? What are the right skills? What part can be outsourced to technology? You know, how can AI and automation help us with where we're going? What skills need to be reskilled, upskilled within the organization to meet these new strategic directions that we know we're going in? So that's just a quick overview, but it's very much about, as I said, the future is now. So taking a snapshot of where you are now, we don't focus a lot on the past. Past really isn't going to give us much other than success, which is great, but that'll come out of the things that we do. And we use a number of really cool, sort of, I'd call them, rather than the SWOT analysis, we have some proprietary analysis that we do that are very much focused on now and future and really gets to really what's working and what needs to happen to shift to get to that future. Yeah.
So before we get into the example of it, I've got five. I must have missed one. So discover, ideate, is it model?
Model.
Iterate.
Map. Integrate.
Map. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got you. I got this. Great. So, before we get into example, because this is, of course, very, very design thinking-esque. So,
Yes.
yeah. So I'm curious about your background. I mean, have you spent a lot of time in design thinking, working with some of the folks at IDEO or Stanford or, in your case, Rotman School in Toronto? Of course, Roger Martin is a Canadian. So tell me, is there any background there in that?
I have not specifically sought out design thinking as a modality for our firm. And interestingly enough, when we came up with this process, this was a collaboration between what we'd already been doing, which we did not know was aligned with design thinking until, of course, we started to look at it and go, oh, okay, this is design thinking. And I have done online programs for design thinking. So as far as me learning, and that would have been after we did this, because I wanted to make sure I had a linkage and I knew the content.
Sure.
My background, honestly, for over 20 plus years has been, we have on our team, my husband is a partner in the business. He's got a background in organizational development and organizational reorg design. So he brings high analysis and high data input from his past. He also has a master's in conflict and mediation. Our team has consultants who are certified in design thinking and certified in coaching and consulting. My background is really results-driven, is the results I've gotten for my clients, but I've not taken any kind of model and said, okay, I'm certified in this model. It's actually been customized solutions for the client that's a combination of research and data along with things that have worked and we know work. So that's my short answer to what you're saying.
I had sort of a similar experience when I got wind of design thinking 8 years ago when I was went to Stanford and took a course there, and it was like, oh, I've been doing OD this for 20 years.
Exactly.
And similar. I mean, it's just, and it makes it nice though to I like the fact that you have it in a somewhat linear fashion, even though of course it's not linear, certainly, but it is, there is a way. I was talking actually to someone today, a boss of one of my clients, and you know, I was talking about how for engineers, especially design thinking, and certainly this process too, even though it's not a linear process per se, but the fact that we can put it in steps actually makes it easier to, you know, just grapple with. So I'm excited to hear your model or framework, I guess you could call it. So can you give us sort of an example? I know some of this is proprietary, but an example of something you can share maybe from your book or that kind of brings it to life for us?
Yeah, we have a number of clients. We tend to have a lot of clients who are going through, every organization is going through massive change. In my book, The Art of Change Leadership, I give some examples of companies. And really, you could look at this process that we offer here, and it is a framework for change. It is a framework that can be applied over a business, but also over a leader or over a team member or over a team. So it can be overlaid almost any challenge and then used as a process to get to solutions. So that was kind of how we designed it on purpose, so that it could be used in multiple ways. One of the clients I'm thinking of when you ask for an example is in the insurance business. They are struggling with the reality of how AI and automation is affecting client interface. And so we have been through this process with them. And what's really illuminating is even though this is a step-by-step, which appeals very much to analytical-minded people, mm-hmm. Really with next mapping, we're all about people first. And so what we find when we overlay the process is always what is unveiled or revealed is where there are people stuck edges, if you will. You know, in other words, communication is broken down, or the mission hasn't been reclarified, or people are just not willing to change. They're digging in their heels, and they're going, we've done it this way for 20 years. We're insurance. We're successful. We don't need to change. So we've done this process, and by doing this process, what it does is it brings along all of those personality dynamics. So the analyticals like that it's step-by-step. The people preference people really like that the results speak to what needs to change with people. The drivers like it because it's very clear data at the end that says this is what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And the collaborators, the socializers, like it because it's a combination of both data and people. And so there's a clear sort of solution that can be seen. And there's a vision that emerges once you go through the process. So with this particular company, we've worked with them for 4 years. One of the key principles that we talk about is shared leadership. And I talk about this a lot in my writing. And that's where we're going, is towards a holacracy model. What I see, though, is that holacracy as a process on its own is not viable for most organizations. It's too far to get from tradition mm-hmm. to this brand mm-hmm. new model. We see our process as the midpoint. We see us as helping you get there. So we don't want people to get to full-on holacracy because it's not a perfect model, as you know. It's actually got some flaws to it. We see that the best thing is to create your own customized shared leadership program that's going to help mm-hmm. you shift the mindset of the leaders away from autocracy and tradition towards less ego, more sharing, more development, more growth, and therefore more progress. So this organization went over 4 years, has completely transformed. They've increased their success by about 30%. That's, you know, pure numbers. But on the other side of that is the innovation that has happened. So they've innovated. They're in a small town. Rather than wait for the small town to bring wireless to them, they actually came up with a creative innovation project to create wireless for the entire town. They did it in a very innovative way that we worked with them on. And then they were able to get every one of their leaders through a change leadership mindset. They went through our online courses. And now what we're finding is higher engagement, higher innovation, and they're actually leaders in the industry now because other insurance companies are looking at them going, how are you doing this? And, you know, why is it working for you? Because a lot of traditional businesses hear shared leadership and right away they go to too many cooks in the kitchen. There's no way it can work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a pushback mentality. But anyway, I'll stop talking there and just an example.
It's great.
Yeah, that's
it's great.
Example. Yeah.
I love that they did the private public partnership and you know, did the wireless for the city. That's mm-hmm. awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm wondering about, though, is first of all, I know what holacracy is, but could you explain that? Because I don't know if everybody on the call even knows what that means, much less how to spell it.
Yeah. So holacracy, and there's a website, holacracy.org, that people can go to and find out more. But, you know, it's gotten a lot of airplay over the last few years, Zappos,
yes.
GE. There's been also like both pros and cons around the concept, but holacracy is basically rather than have titles and leaders in authoritative positions, it's about teams and circles. And that work is the driver, and then the work is disseminated, and people are encouraged to choose projects and teams where they can elevate their strengths. And the type of skills needed to work in a holacracy are incredible collaboration skills, which means being mm-hmm. willing to hear differing opinions, the ability to really value diversity on every level. So diverse opinions, diverse cultures, values, diversity at its maximum. And so holacracy only works if you've got people who have foundational leadership ability themselves. So one of the concepts we talk about is everyone is a leader in the future, which means everyone will have accountability and an entrepreneurial basis, foundation that they will need to bring in order for the organization to drive forward. And that leaders of the future, we still will have titles, but they will morph and change. They won't be necessarily – one of the things we did with this insurance company is we took away the VP titles and called them mm-hmm. new names. So, for example, the CEO herself is called Chief Empowerment Officer. So we completely shifted those titles to reflect less of a hierarchy and more of a collaborative shared leadership culture. So Holacracy is kind of, it's an extreme, and it is actually quite regimented, which I think is a con to it. It is quite, it's more about systems than it is about people, and it is getting some backlash now because of that. And I do think the future is an integrated model of people first, and then how do we set up the systems and structures to create that shared leadership initiative. And we're seeing that in, you know, workspace, for example, companies like WeWork, and those, you know, we're seeing workspace lending itself to collaborative, you know, leadership sharing work. I have a client I just worked with in Las Vegas. They're in the gaming industry, and they just went from full-on office and segregated workspace to completely open. And it's a big change. So the biggest thing they've had to do is change leadership with the entire company, because people have gone from private enclosed time to now open space, which requires a completely different mindset. So Holacracy is sort of the dream of that, in my opinion. And I, like I said, I don't think it's the panacea, because I think it has some flaws, and we've done a lot of research on it here at Next Mapping, and we think that for tech companies starting out, Holacracy can be established quite rapidly. But if you're a traditional organization or a long-term organization, getting to Holacracy is a huge change leadership endeavor.
Yeah, I was just, it's so funny you said that, because I was just going to say that if you take a Z or a Y who is generous, and Z or Y who is used to that already, and the way they share information. I mean, this is so much open. It's just such a different – I have a 13-year-old, so I'm living this every day. This is such an open an openness around the way they share data, the way they share information, the way they share themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a – so the idea of openness is like it's like water to them. So it would make a lot of sense if you're starting a company. And I also just spent time with a workspace executive team yesterday. So it's like it's on my mind about how they create spaces. So it would make no difference to them to be all in, you know, in the bullpen and together. So I think that it's possible certainly in the future. And this is a sort of a stake in the ground here that I guess I could make. But I mean, I think I could see it much more with the present generations. So, you know, 20 years from now when they're in charge or more of them are in charge, you know, it's they'll have already have done this, then it would be no big deal to them. So Holacracy is like, you know, again, no big deal. I agree with you, though, that trying to get somebody, a company that's already been doing it a certain way is harder, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stop a second, because we've gone over a lot of things. We've talked about Next Mapping as a concept and the six different steps to that. We've talked about the insurance company. We've talked about, you know, how automation is going to play a part in here, and demystifying that, and how in both cases you've kind of presented the hybrid of these. And I'm with you on both accounts. So I'm going to open it up here. Does anybody have a comment, question? If you do, great. We welcome that. And say your name first and then your question or comment. Okay. Well, we'll keep it on unmute. And again, if you're wanting to ask me a question online, that's fine too. So I want to keep on this, so the subject of work in the respect of collaboration, because I think that's when we think about the future of work, I think and the skills that are needed, certainly collaboration, you know, I don't know if it's the top of the list, but it's certainly near the top. And I wanted to, obviously that's our business, trying to help people, you know, people team, and it's part of what you guys do. So I'm kind of wondering how you see that as how much of an emphasis that's going to be in, let's say, I don't know, what I call it, 10 years, 20 years, whatever you want to say.
Can you repeat that? Sorry, I think I lost you there. If you could just repeat
Sorry, no problem. Just the idea of collaboration being such an important skill especially in the future. I wanted us to kind of go over, like, what are the three or four more most important skills people are going to need in the next 10 years? And So I was just going to start with collaboration, but we can certainly go over some others as well. So if you could speak to that, it would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it goes back to what you said quite intelligently when you said, you know, Generation Z and Y, collaboration isn't even In fact, if you bring it up to them as a concept, they're like, what do you mean? We do that. We're wired for that. That's innate for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the next 10 years, it's going to be exactly what I talk about in the book, where the hybrid, the integration of technology to help us be more focused on people and on leveraging what people do best, which is relationship, create commitment, the ability to solve problems with that human mind and then leveraging technology. I really believe that we're on the road there, and 10 years from now, that will be the new norm. I think the opportunity today is, regardless of generation, to look at and say, you know, where am I limiting collaboration, or where am I perhaps resisting collaboration? Because I think a lot of people, you know, when I do a keynote speech, I might poll the audience and say, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how collaborative do you think you are? And most people rate themselves very high. They think they're highly collaborative. And then I say, well, you know, and then I say, so if you're highly collaborative, here's what it means. It means that you've got people that can rely on you to come up with creative solutions. It means that you're real-time listening to the problems around you. And then they all lower their score, right, as soon as I say this is what collaboration really means.
Okay.
So I think, you know, it's one of those things where today, you know, you look at the generations, the baby boomers, I call them Zoomers, and the Gen X and some traditionalists that are still in the workforce, I think they'd like to believe they're highly collaborative, but I call BS on that, because I think we, you know, the Zoomers and the Gen X, we've been wired actually to be rewarded and to be performance reviewed on our ability to get be a lone wolf and go out and get stuff done.
Took it right out of my mouth. I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah, because guilty. I'm guilty as charged. You know, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
My success in my career was because I got stuff done. I went out and made stuff happen. I still do that. However, where I failed miserably was in my inability to really collaborate. And collaborate means people are all contributing and people are all being valued for their contribution.
Right.
And so I would say in the past decade, you know, in my firm, I've gotten much, much better at it. You know, I've had to by nature of what we do. But also I catch myself regularly when I feel myself going rogue, you know, and going, okay, I'm just going to go do this. And then it's like, whoa, wait a second, what about – you know, what about our COO? What about our client services manager? What about our client X? And having to really come back to that mind frame of, am I collaborating as I drive this forward? And I think that's the opportunity for all of us. And,
there's no question. I think that that's where they can teach us, for sure. To me, the issue is not, because you're right, the mindset is wired already from the minute they're online with their buddies, you know, on a group text, just constantly, you know, share. I mean, and I'm actually, I think I'm super open, so I would consider myself, like, you know, similar in my ability. You know, I don't have privacy issues. I'm just like, I'm an open book kind of thing.
No, I don't either.
But I'm nothing compared. I mean, like, that's no big deal. I'm an enigma in my generation. I mean, those guys. I mean, I can't believe some stuff people share. It's just like, what? You know, it's like, wow. So that's the openness is there. So I guess the question is, for me, the concern would be is like to get to more of a shared place where I think that these generations are going to take us. The performance review system, if you will, or management system, is not conducive for this at all. I mean, like not even close.
No.
In terms of how we're rewarded, you know, and I think we are in a lot of companies now are like trying to be cool with, okay, no performance reviews, we're going to have coaching conversations. Okay, we're getting somewhere, except that they're still rewarded individually. I mean, the best we're doing is maybe, well, you know, your group is going to get a bonus based on the performance of the company. But still, like, far away from true collaboration in terms of performance. So I don't know. I mean, until we can really figure out how we can reward for collaboration.
It's interesting. Yeah.
I don't know how
it's
we're going to do it. In school they don't do it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah.
Well, what's going to have to happen is a lot of the people that are in charge of the structures of measurement, they have to change their mindset around what do we measure and what are we trying to achieve. So I've been saying for years that the performance management systems that are in place reward the wrong things.
Yep.
They do not reward what you say you want your workers to be able to do better. So you and I can both agree that the system is not, it no longer serves what. And a lot of the Gen Zs and Ys are saying, actually, I don't even see the value of a performance system other than unless it's real-time performance. So you look at social media, We get real-time feedback. You post something, you're going to get somebody who's going to say something about it. So similar to the workspace, Gen Z and Y are saying, I want real-time feedback. So if I do really well, I want you to tell me. And if I don't, I want you to tell me right then and there, and I want you to help get better. So Ripple.com and, you know, is now Salesforce. There's been some tools that are being created that help gather that real-time data, and then those data, that data is turned into dashboards. What I'm seeing with our companies that we're working with is really leveraging that real-time in the form of coaching. So I would say the number one skill when you talk about future of work that leaders are not really, they haven't maximized it yet, is coaching. And seeing those real-time moments for optimal coaching rather than formalized coaching, which is where you sit down with your worker, you know, once a month and you go through a coaching process. I'm talking about, I'm working with you, you say something or do something wonderful with a client, I pull you aside and say, that was freaking awesome, do that some more. You know, when you said this, that wasn't so cool, here's some ideas on how to do it better. Like that real-time has far more impact than you and I, and I came up through the ranks of the annual performance review, and I used to roll my eyes, like most people do, every year. Because when they write those, they become irrelevant about 2 days after they've written them. So,
Exactly. Well, you'll be happy to know that 20 years ago, or actually maybe 23 years ago, we came up with a concept called in-the-moment coaching, and we've been using it since. So we came up with it because we were doing just-in-time or real-time coaching with Oracle customer service reps. And so, you know, then we just, of course, used it and applied it with everybody. And so, yeah, I'm totally with you. I think that people need to, so, you know, this is 20 years ago, way before the millennials were, you know, getting trophies, you know, for everything they did. So there's a need, and everybody wants this. So it's not like it's millennials. I mean, this is what I can teach us. I mean, there's a need for just in time, real time, in the moment feedback. And and that's how people can get better. It's just like a sports team. They're getting feedback constantly on the course or on the field, and they're turning it into practice right there. It's the same thing in business. It's not any different. So anyway, well, this is great. I love listening. So of course, collaboration is one skill. Coaching is another skill. What would you say maybe are two or more skills, and then we're going to need to stop.
We could talk for hours. I think, you know, one of the top ones that I write about is the ability to really shift your thinking rapidly. We call it agility or adaptability. So, you know, with agile thinking, it's really that real-time creative solution ability. You know, the ability to, in the moment, there's a problem, and rather than see it as a problem and put the brakes on, using the mind to go to, oh, this is familiar. What do we know from the past about this? Okay, what do we know that we're hearing about where this is heading as a trend? Okay, what's a real-time solution? And not necessarily acting on that real-time solution, but at being able to identify solution more rapidly rather than problem. There's a lot of people out there who can identify problems. They become problem-solving or problem-seeking missiles, I call them. You know, they're constantly sniffing out problems, which is great, actually, because that's where innovation happens as well. But I would say the agility to be able to shift a problem into an opportunity is a huge future of work skill for anybody, a leader or a team.
You're calling it adaptability? What'd you call it?
Agile thinking or adaptability of the mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, because there's other terms for agile, as you know, in the world of technology and stuff, but we're using it from a mindset perspective. And then the other one I would say is the ability to have multiple perspectives. So, and we have infographics on this and a lot of free infographics for any of your listeners that they can get at our site. But the multiple perspectives, in concept it sounds, again, I'll do this in front of audiences on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being high, how would you rate your ability to see multiple perspectives? Average audience, 9 out of 10. And I'll go back and say, okay, so that means on an average day, every day, you're thinking about your own work and how it's impacting the whole. You're thinking about your team and how their work is impacting the whole. You're thinking about your leader and their obligations and what they have to create. You're thinking about their boss. You're thinking about the company, you're thinking about the industry, you're thinking about your competitors, you're thinking about the future, and this is all factoring in every action you take. And then the rating drops to 3. You know, so again.
And then they feel like shit, and you have to figure out how to make them feel better.
Yeah, then I boost them back up again. Because I say to them, you know, you're right on trend. Don't feel bad. This is what happens with everybody, you know.
Right,
and
right.
So the key is, because from my perspective as a consultant and a coach, until you self-assess or really, and that's what the next method is all about, like the truth of where you are. And then from there, we can go, okay, what needs to shift and what are the opportunities? So not from a place of, oh, my God, I'm worse than I thought I was, but really inspiring to go, hey, you know what?
Sure.
I'm pretty good. I've got three perspectives. I really want to build my ability to see a dozen at a time. How do I do that? Let me set a 90-day goal to make that happen. So
that's
I would say, you know, those are the things we're seeing. As when I see people that we work with that have those abilities, they're able to move quickly. They're able to change direction on a dime. They're able to be highly ahead of their competition. And they're able to have highly engaged teams of people, because what's more inspiring than working with other people who are solution-focused and who are willing to take full responsibility for their skills.
Mm-hmm.
That's inspiration right there. Yeah.
Right. I love it. So collaboration, coaching, adaptability, and multiple perspectives. Love it. Those are all great.
Yeah.
So thank you
really
so much. I hope that if you are in San Francisco or the Bay Area that we get to have a drink or dinner. I would love to treat you to that, really. There's a lot of things that your mind is popping all over the place, and I just want to, like, ask you so many questions. So, so thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Again, you can find Cheryl on nextmapping.com, and her Twitter is at Cheryl Cran, and I assume that's how we found you. And at least go follow her on Twitter. And are you on Instagram as well?
Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, yes.
Okay, all of it. All right, great. Again, thank you so much, Cheryl, and have a wonderful, wonderful day. I appreciate it.
Thank you as well. Appreciate the questions.
Okay.
They were great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Take care. Bye now.